Good afternoon, everybody. Today on I Don't Care with Dr. Kevin Stevenson, I'm incredibly delighted to be joined by someone who has helped shape healthcare not only in Texas, but across the country for decades, Mr. Joel Allison. Joel has served for many years as president and CEO of Baylor Scott & White Health, leading one of the largest faith-based health systems in the United States through tremendous growth and transformation. And he's also served as the chair of the Baylor University Board of Regents and has mentored countless leaders along the way. But beyond the titles, I am blessed to be able to say that Joel is a friend. He's a fellow member of First Baptist Church of Waco. And so today's conversation is going to be less about resumes and more about lessons learned along the way regarding leadership, faith, tough decisions, and what life looks like after the C-suite. Joel, thanks for joining me on I Don't Care.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm humbled and honored. You're a great friend, and I just appreciate the fact that you allow me to do this, and I appreciate your very kind words. I tell you, I wish my mom were alive to hear how nice you were about me. Kevin, that would be helpful. Bless her heart. But no, thank you so much. It's good to be with you. You doing okay?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for asking. So Joel, obviously people know your career and what you did in that. But tell me, what's something about you that people in healthcare would never guess about Joel Allison?
Well, probably a lot that people wouldn't guess about me. But I guess the one unique thing that I don't think anybody knows is that back in high school, I was licensed as a minister my senior year at Jeff City in the state of Missouri. So I'm a licensed minister there, and I actually performed two weddings. So, and then I went off to Baylor.
Well, you think it typically happened the opposite way, Joel. People go to Baylor and then go into the ministry, but you did it the other way. And you and
I did. We had a.
I'm also licensed, and I've only performed one wedding, but I'm happy to say I'm one for one. They're still together. So,
amen. Well, I know it's one for two because it's one of my classmates, and we still stay in touch. So they've been married 50 some odd years. The other one was a guy I'd worked with in the street department when I was between semesters. I got him married, and we hope we hitched him, but I lost track of him. But anyway.
Uh-oh.
It was an interesting experience, so I appreciate knowing that maybe I know for sure one of them is doing great.
Well, that's fantastic. So, Joel, you led Baylor Scott & White through tremendous growth and transformation. And looking back now with a little bit of distance, what was the decision that felt the riskiest at the time but ultimately proved to be the right one?
I think by far the riskiest was one, coming to a conclusion that we were going to try to merge with Scott & White in discussions with the CEO at that time. And we'd had that over breakfast one morning. And I think the riskiest thing was for us to both go back to our chairs and say what we were thinking about. And in fact, we were right because after we each talked to our chairs, we talked again on the phone and said, how did it go? And he said, well, it didn't go well. I was afraid I was going to be fired. I said, well, mine didn't go well either. I said, I think we both almost lost our jobs over this because they both almost identical. They said, what are y'all crazy? There's no way we're going to do that. So the riskiest thing was taking that to the board chair and saying, we've got this great idea that Bob and I want to pursue, but it didn't last for long. So we kind of had to take some time off and try to go back and forth to talk about why we thought it was a good idea. But we were blessed that it ultimately did. We got both boards completely supportive, and that it was a very risky decision. It honestly was risky because we just didn't know where it would end up, including after they agreed. Then you've got the biggest risk is how do you integrate the two systems? And so, yeah, that probably in all my career, that was by far, I mean, there are a lot of risky decisions that you make in healthcare, as you know, Kevin. That one was by far the riskiest.
Sure. When was that original conversation?
That original conversation happened about 2011. And then we finalized it in 2013. So you can see it took 2 years of a lot of discussion with our individual boards, a lot of consulting, a lot of going looking at other systems, and a lot of discussion with the board, each individually, then bringing some of the members together to have discussions. And so, yeah, it was a process. We actually had a little cooling off period at one time. We said, this really isn't going anywhere. And we hadn't announced anything. The good thing is we had agreed once we were going to start the discussions, we would never mention that we were considering it until, number one, both boards had said, yes, we're going to merge. Number two, we're going to burn the boats on this. We're going to name the next chair and the initial chair and the initial CEO and the name of the organization. But we're saying nothing until we know it's going to get to a final point.
Well, I was in Dallas at the time when all of this happened, and I remember the first time I heard it, I'm like, what in the world? It just shows the vision that the two of you had in the beginning. But then as I started thinking about it, it made great sense because of the synergies and the differences that you had. Whenever you came together, it created such a broad and comprehensive system, and it just made wonderful
Yeah,
sense.
well, I appreciate that. And one of the reasons that we were able to do this is for years we had worked together. We were part of a quality initiative of about 10 health systems talking about quality. And so we spent a lot of time doing that. And we also were both members of the same purchasing group for a while. And of course, we did not overlap in our markets, which also helped, as you know, from an antitrust. We kind of each came. I went south, Better Health Care System went south down to just above Hillsboro, and then they came up to Waco when they acquired Hillcrest. And so there was a space there between us where we did not overlap nor compete geographically. So we had the same commitment to quality. We both had education and research in our really the mission statements, and we both were very committed to the fact of taking care of all people. And there was a lot of, alignment in that. And actually, my board said, we're going to do a, if we're going to do this, first thing we're going to do is we're going to do a cultural audit to see what it looks like. Because he was a CEO of a major company and had been through mergers and acquisitions. And he said, the reasons a lot of them fail is because the cultures didn't match. And that's what they wanted to see, because we had distinct cultures, but we also had so many similarities. And that's what the consultants we had, we hired an outside consultant to come in, do the audit, reported individually to each board, and said, you all are much more aligned than you are unlike each other. And this makes a lot of sense.
Very interesting. So healthcare leaders often feel pressured to project certainty. We have to come out like we know everything. But was there a moment during your tenure when you truly didn't know the answer, and how did you lead through that?
Well, Kevin, as you know, with the changes in healthcare, there were a lot of times when I didn't know the answer. Just there's no way you know the answer, and some of the things and how fast it was moving, and some of the issues you were facing. And what I was blessed with was, number one, I had good people around me. I always tried to hire people much smarter than me, and listen to them. The other thing is I have always had mentors. I've had professional mentors, business mentors, spiritual mentors that would help me with continuing with my faith approach to doing what I did. And so, through a lot of study, a lot of research, a lot of discussion, a lot of times when I didn't really have the answer, I thought maybe I had an idea, but I found out many times that was good. But you got to have those sounding boards. So, through prayer and good people and listening to advisors, I think that's how you come up with some answers to what you don't know.
Okay, I've got to know this. Who were your healthcare mentors?
Well, the first mentor I had was Boone Powell Jr.
I thought
Yeah,
so.
he was my first one. And then Jim Collins, good to great, became a mentor and got to know Jim. And then when I went to Harvard for the AMP, John Cotter became a mentor to me on change management. And I had both of those gentlemen come speak to my leadership team. I talked to them several times. I actually went to Boulder to be with Jim Collins for a few days. So those were my Boone Powell Jr., though, was my mentor my entire career, literally.
Sure. I don't know why that's not a surprise,
Where I
but
started,
that's
where I finished.
right. That's right. So you've led one of the largest faith-based health systems in the country, and you served as chair of Baylor's Board of Regents. So, and I've got an idea, but I want to hear it from you. How did your faith shape the way that you made really hard leadership decisions?
Well, Kevin, as you know, and like I said, we go to church together, we've been in Sunday school together. My faith is very, very important to me. It's been a huge part. In fact, I felt called into the ministry of healthcare, and that was in my senior year at Baylor when I was struggling with what God wanted me to do. And so I've always fallen back on the fact that God, you've led me to this. It's my calling. I love what I do. I need your guidance. I need your help. And so, yeah, my faith has played a huge part. And my faith began with my mom. I've got to give a lot of credit to my mom, who's a wonderful, devout Christian and guided me and helped me when I could have easily gone astray. But she was a rock for me and kept my direction and my compass at true north and made sure I was in church when those doors opened. She moved us off of the farm because I was going to a small school. She told me I'd be the first in our family to go to college. And she moved us off so I could get to Jeff City, which was a little bit bigger school, to get more education, she felt, to get me to college, because nobody in our family had ever been to college. And I didn't know anything about it other than I know people went, but I got to learn a little bit more. So, yeah. And I felt like God's the one that led me to Baylor. It was a God thing that I got to Baylor. And I've been, so happy, and I just feel blessed by God that that was where I began.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of similarities there. I love the fact that you talk about the calling of healthcare because that was the same thing with me. I was in another industry. I don't know if you know this. I was in another industry for 4 years, and we were in Little Rock. And one of your friends I know and colleagues, Russ
Oh,
Harrington,
yeah.
was a mentor of mine and was happened to be our Sunday school
Oh,
teacher.
wow.
And he told me, he said, "I know you're not happy in what you're doing. Send me your resume. I have no idea what we have." And about 8 weeks later, he gave me the opportunity to start to begin my healthcare career. And literally the first day I felt the calling.
Wonderful.
And that's how I approached it my entire 37
Oh,
years.
wonderful. Yeah, that was evident. You had a good one in Russ. You had a good advisor, a good mentor right there. Russ is a
That's right.
great guy. And when you were at Arkansas Baptist, which you can't get it any better and more faith-based than that. And it's that's what I tell people. You and I both have this feeling of a calling. So I tell people, I was in healthcare for 45 years, but I never worked a day in my life.
Right.
I know you and I both, we loved what we did. It was a passion that we had. And I always felt, no matter how difficult, how hard, that, hey, this is what you were called to do. And God's with you. He will cover you. And just, listen to his call and listen to his words. So that's why faith was so important to me.
Yeah, me as well. So you've worked with thousands of executives and physicians over the years. What separates a good healthcare leader from a truly exceptional one?
Well, as you pointed out, there's a lot of great healthcare leaders. I've been blessed to have as you have, CEO colleagues that I had great respect for, learned from. I wouldn't bash about stealing a good idea from a former CEO or CEO that was in another market, and we had good ideas we'd share. And I've met so many good people in healthcare and physician leaders, as well as administrative leaders. And when you say what separates the good, there's many good ones from maybe exceptional. I fall back on Jim Collins, his description of what he calls a level five leader. And people at the level five leadership point are those that I would call exceptional. At level four, there's some great leaders that run great organizations, but the exceptional ones, what he called a level five. And I was always impressed with that because what he said a level five was, and that's your aspiration, is that you are someone with tremendous resolve, but modesty and humility with the confidence to do what you need to do. But you have this tremendous professional will to succeed, but you temper it with true, honest humility. I refer to it as a servant leader. If you look at what a servant leader is, with putting others ahead of yourself, because a level five leader does what they do not out of wanting fame or recognition. In fact, they don't want that usually, but what they want is for their organization to be successful, and they have a passion for it and a passion to take that resolve they have to be successful and give the credit to everybody else that helped them do that.
So when you were mentoring leaders, what traits told you that they were ready for the next level, a bigger responsibility?
I would say, obviously, number one is integrity. I knew they had high integrity. I could count on them. They'd been accountable with maybe less responsibility. When people do well with less responsibility, you always are quick to give them more responsibility. So you could count on them. You could know that they had a real sense of what they were doing. And many of them had the same sense of a calling and a passion for what they were doing for maybe a little bit different reason, but this is what they wanted to do. This was their life's work. And I just had tremendous trust in them. And I felt like they would have my back because I would say, I'll have your back. And I guess for me, that's how I wanted to then promote them to be successful. I was, one who said, if you got an opportunity to do better and better yourself and your family and your career, I'm with you 100%. So giving them those opportunities as well as encouraging them, being there for them, taking the time with them, developing them, give them the skills of when they want to learn more. I believe very strongly in continued education. I wanted all of our staff to be leaders in their area and to go to meetings, be available to take on additional educational roles and things of going for, you want to go for another certificate, you want to go for another degree. And we'll work together to see that that's accomplished so that you can achieve your dreams and your goals.
I can attest to that with my time when I was at Baylor All Saints in Fort Worth. I was just, of all the organizations that I was a part of, Baylor really afforded me the opportunities to grow through conferences, and through continuing education. I always appreciated that. So, you definitely made that happen for me, and I know for thousands of other leaders as well. So speaking of that, if you could sit down with a young hospital CEO today, what's one piece of advice you would give them that you wish somebody had given you earlier in your career?
Boy, when you say one piece of advice, given that hard, man, that's
I'm not going to limit it. If you want to say, three or
Well,
four, who am I to tell you no?
I think kind of like we talked earlier, I think the one piece of advice I give a young guys, a young woman that's looking at going further is number one, you don't have to have all the answers. Don't feel like you got to have all the answers. And then what we talked about, number two, get you mentors and advisors to help you. And I always caution them, as I was cautioned, remember who you choose to be your mentor or advisor will determine the kind of advice you're going to get. And that really resonates with me. And so I tell them, look, you need mentors, you need advisors, you need the right ones. That's why I always, for me, I wanted to have a professional, a smart professional. Mm-hmm. I also wanted a spiritual advisor that could help me deal with faith. And when things were a little bit shaky, that I needed to reestablish my faith base. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would say, number one, you don't have to have all the answers. Don't feel like if somebody asks you a question, you can't answer it. Don't worry. Just tell them, oh, let me look at that, and mm-hmm. I'll find the answer for you. And get your advisors and your mentors in place. And then I guess the other thing is just know yourself. Know who you are. As you, I'm sure, have had discussions about, you've got to know the why. Why do you do what you are doing, or why do you want to do this? I think when people answer the why question, they learn a lot. The other piece that I would probably say is, make sure you understand your value system and be sure you develop a framework for making decisions. How will you make decisions going forward? Because you're going to have to, as you evolve from leadership position to leadership position, from small responsibilities to big responsibilities, how you make decisions and the framework you use, I think, is extremely important to the type of decisions that are made.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe I neglected to ask this earlier. Who was your spiritual advisor and mentor?
Well, when I was in Dallas the whole time, and I had him in my other parts, but one of the great ones is Dr. Bill Pinson, who I still stay in touch mm-hmm. with. Dr. Pinson was at one time the head of the Baptist General Convention of Texas, a great theological, spiritual leader in Baptist life. He then retired, moved over actually to about four floors above me in one of the office buildings there on the main campus. And he was the kind of the mm-hmm. part of the Baptist History Library. And he did a lot of writing and things like that. And he was right there, very, very handy. Both the BGCT was on our campus, as you know, before they moved. And then mm-hmm. his office, when he retired, moved over to our campus. So I stayed very close to Dr. Benson. And he was a wonderful, wonderful spiritual advisor for me and prayer partner. So, yes, great, great man of God.
That's great. So you've watched healthcare evolve over a number of decades. What's something that the industry spends too much time worrying about and something that we probably don't worry about enough?
You know, when you mention that, I think about what's going on in healthcare today. And you know it. I think you were just at Congress in Houston.
I was.
You probably heard a lot of, I wasn't, but I'm sure you heard a lot of good speakers talking about what's going on in healthcare. There's been so much that the healthcare executives are have to worry about. And I look at them as worries. You worry, but it's also challenges. And they've kind of run into a perfect storm in my mind, Kevin. And I don't know if they're spending too much time worrying on it. I think maybe they spend too much time on small things and kind of overlook the big things. But one of the things that they've got to deal with right now, and it is a worry, is AI, cybersecurity, mm-hmm. looking at all this, the data management. They're being challenged with reimbursement pressures, and how do they manage the operational expenses that go along with that. I don't think they maybe worry enough. Two things that I think you got to spend time on, and some people do. I mean, not being out there and active, I just know what I read, and I can say I'm glad I'm retired. These people have tremendous pressures on them from all angles, but I think the two things I would mention is good quality outcomes. How do we start really measuring the outcomes to know that we're getting quality, cost-effective care? and efficient care, but at the same time, worrying a little bit about your staff, your doctors, your nurses, your technician. Burnout is real today, and staffing, very challenging to get staff. And for organizations that are trying to deliver high quality care, having adequate staff, having the ability to attract them, keeping your wage, salaries, and benefits at a high level while you're also struggling with continued declining reimbursement and a lot of uncertainty right now. I mean, something that you wouldn't worry about, but you got to worry about a little bit is this whole tariffs in your supply chain. I mean, what happens when you can't get products? A lot, and with the oil situation, a lot of things are made from, you know, oil for plastics to use in, as you know, in healthcare. And just the disruption that comes from the supply chain to be sure you've got everything you need at the time you need it to deliver the care that you need to deliver. You know, you're living the right care at the right time, the right place, in the right way, and the right amount. And then you got to be able to prove that that outcome is the right way. And I think we've got to be thinking about how we use technology as a tool. It's not the solution. AI won't be a solution, but you're going to have to learn how to use it as a tool, along with data management, interoperability. I mean, the list is significant, but that's why you surround yourself with good people.
Sure.
I like to try to transfer some of that worry to others. And that's your worry. I'm not worried over here. So
that's right.
A lot more than you wanted, but.
No, not at all. I remember one of my CEOs once told me, we were in a meeting, and somebody asked him a question about, I think it was about growth or something. He goes, I don't worry about it. And he pointed at me, he goes, that's his problem.
There you go.
I said, yeah, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. So you've been out of the C-suite for a little while. What surprised you most about that life after CEO?
Well, couple of things that surprised me. I guess number one is I wasn't using an alarm clock as much as I thought I needed to. Still may wake up early, but I could turn it over and go back to sleep.
Right, right.
The other thing, and this was something a friend of mine who retired a couple of years before I did, and I was asking him, I said, tell me a little bit about what happens after retirement. What do you do? What he said, he said, you're going to find your Sunday afternoons and evenings are going to be totally different. And he was right, because you and I know you usually on Sunday after church and lunch and visiting time with the family and my wife and maybe taking a little nap or something. About 3 o'clock, you start thinking about the rest of your week and what's going to happen Monday.
Sure.
And he said, you know, you're going to get to Sunday evening, Sunday night, you're going to be able to go to a movie, not worry. And so he was right. And then I think the other thing, and anybody that's retired runs into this, you're amazed at the opportunities that come your way to stay engaged in some way.
Right.
A lot more.
Right.
People think you're retired, you're not busy, and you don't have anything going on. And they want to say, hey, would you like to go on this not-for-profit board? Would you like to help with this and that? And so, yeah, of course, for me, I didn't have a chance to kind of say, what am I going to do? Because you'll recall, you mentioned it, I retired in February 1st, 2017. And in March, the nominating committee from Baylor Board of Regents came to me and said, we want you to step in as board chair.
I remember that.
A busy time in the life of Baylor for the Baylor folks.
It was.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance and to do, but I was blessed. Dr. Livingstone and I started on the same day. We started our roles on the same July 1st, 17. And she is a tremendous, she's a level 5 leader in my mind. So, yeah, my time was a little bit better utilized, and it was easier than maybe some others that where the board has to be much more active. We had a good leader, but yeah. So yeah, you're going to have opportunities. You're just
yeah. That's That's very true. And I remember right as you were retiring, we ran into each other somewhere, and it had just been announced that you were going to be the board chair for Baylor. And I remember looking at you and saying, really? I mean, you're taking some time off, Joel.
I do. Yes, and that was what a lot of you weren't the only one that told me that, Kevin. I had a lot of good friends that
I didn't figure.
said, "Dawson, you're crazy."
Yeah, I didn't figure out that I was the only one, but we're so blessed that you did take the role because it was a tough time for the university, and couldn't have imagined a better leader in that time than you.
Right.
So, okay,
Yeah.
last
Sure.
question. After decades of healthcare leadership, if you could leave one piece of wisdom for the next generation of leaders, what would you want them to remember when things get tough?
Number one, I would tell them to rely on their faith. I would encourage people, God's got a plan for you, and if things get really, really tough, number one is rely on your faith. The other thing I would tell executives, and I tell my class over at the MBA in healthcare program at Baylor, I said, be sure as you're going through life, you make some serious decisions. Number one decision for me, and I hope many, is that you choose to follow Jesus Christ. That's number one decision you make, most important in life. Number two is who you choose to be your spouse, because spouses are so important in this world and environment that we live in. And I tell people very upfront, my late wife, 55 years, as you know, who passed, I couldn't have done what I did without her. Great woman of faith, wonderful wife and mother, and she was a rock. And when I'd get up real high, she'd make sure I was back down. And when I got down, she'd say, it ain't as bad as you think it is. And you've got to have a spouse that supports you, that is behind you, and allows you, because you make sacrifices. So, yeah, think about your faith. Think about your spouse. And I just, that's me, but I would advise anybody was asking me, like you just did, that's what I'd say.
Boy, those are wonderful words, and I can echo that because throughout my career, there were times that I only had my faith to get me through some difficult times. And my wife, same thing, wife of now unbelievably 39 years, and she kept me humble a lot of times, and
Well,
she
I
kept
know
me encouraged. And
that was
any time that I had the opportunity to, a couple of times I was honored with different recognition, and the first person after the Lord I thanked was my wife,
Amen.
because I couldn't have done it without her.
I know, and I know your wife, and you are blessed. So, as I was blessed, yeah, never, never
That's
doubt
right.
that importance. And you were right. Boy, I tell you, she never questioned whenever I said, hey, I've been called to take on this new role. She said, okay, where are we going? What do we need to do? Because that's the way she supported me.
Sure.
Because my first three positions were turnarounds. I kind of got into that role of a from my very first CEO job to till I really came to Baylor. The organizations I was called to lead were all turnarounds. The former CEO had been fired. They were in financial trouble or other issues. And so, yeah, she would just say, okay, I'm with you. You get do what you need to do. This is your career, honey. I'm here for you 100%.
That's right. And my wife would be like, where are we going? And I'll start
Yeah,
packing.
exactly.
That's exactly. Well, Joel, this has been just an extreme pleasure for me to have you on. I don't care. Very few people get to become such close friends with icons in their industry, mentors that they've had. And I am so thankful that I can consider you a dear friend.
Well, likewise, Kevin, I am a you're a dear friend of mine, you and Michelle, We appreciate you. Thank you for all you do in your area, but you're also a great member of our church, and we just value that, and I value you as a friend. And I'm, like I said, I'm humbled and honored to have had this opportunity to be with you today, my friend.
Thank you so much. Well, folks, what a pleasure it's been to have Joel Allison on I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I did, and I look forward to seeing you next time. Take care.